Hello.
Senator Dirksen.
All right, put Senator Dirksen on up. I'm ready.
Right.
I'm in a meeting. Tell him I'm in a meeting, but I want to talk. I missed him when I was in Security Council.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Senator Dirksen?
Yeah.
The President.
Hello.
Yeah. Are you in a meeting?
Yes, but go ahead. I can hear.
It's a usual thing. What is the situation?
Everett, we have said to, first of all, now, I cannot tell you this if it's going to be quoted, because I can't tell the candidates and I can't tell anybody else. I haven't talked to a human. I want to comply with it and trust, but I sure don't want it told to a human.
I'll give you my solemn word.
All right. The situation is this. Since September of last year, we have told Hanoi that we would stop the bombing. We're anxious to stop it. When they would engage in, these are the key words, prompt, productive discussions that they would not take advantage of.
Yeah.
That is September. March 31st, I came to the conclusion that no living man could run for office and be a candidate and have them all shooting at him and keep this war out of politics and get peace. So I concluded that I should not run because I just prolonged the war by doing it. So I said then, we're stopping the bombing in 90%. We will stop it in the rest. If there can be any indication, that it will not cost us additional lives. We got just a lot of procrastination up until October. During October, they started asking questions, what did I mean by prompt and what did I mean by productive? Now, the facts of life are that they tried two offensives in May and August and they got very severe setbacks. The facts are that they've had 35,000-40,000 leave the country to refit. The facts are that they're not doing it all well. But they can continue to supply what they need for a very long time. But in October, we started getting these nibbles. What did the president mean? What did he said that he had to have prompt and productive and not take advantage. We said that we would consider productive the GVN had to be present. They said they were just generals and stooges and satellites, and Johnson put them in office and that they would never sit down with those traitors. We said you've got to sit down with them before we can ever work out the future. We can't settle the future of South Vietnam without them being present. We're not going to pull a Hitler-Chamberlain deal.
Yeah.
They said, well, they'd never do it. So on October the 7th or 11th, I've forgotten, they said, well, now what else? Is that all the president wants? If we would sit down with the GVN, what would he do? Now, they made no commitment. They didn't indicate they'd accept it. They just asked the question. But in, you know, in trading, when a fellow said, how much would you take for that horse? Why, you kind of think that means something. So we followed it up and said, no, we don't want to limit ourselves. The GVN's got to be present, and we've got to have productive discussions, and we think they could be productive if they were present. But we can't have a Pam and John and say, well, we'll do that, but we'll meet a year from now.
Yeah.
It's got to be a prompt meeting, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. So they said, well, if we could work everything out, we could meet the next day. So we came back to them and said that if you will let the GVN come in and we'll meet the next day, we would like to take that up with our government. They said, well, what else do you want? Is that all? You write off that? And Harriman said, no. These are facts of life, and we know you're not going to sell out and engage in reciprocity, and that you're not going to accept conditions. Your pride and your Asiatic face will not let you do that. You've got to save face. We understand that. But we could not sit at a conference table if you were shelling the cities. In other words, if I were talking to Dirksen in my living room and my son was raping his wife, he'd have to get up and leave and quit trading and run and protect her. So we just could not sit there if you were shelling the cities. Nor could we sit there and have a productive discussion if you were abusing the DMZ.
Yeah.
So they said, well, that's reciprocity and we're not going to pay attention to it. And they, about that time, Nixon made some little statement about we handled the war wrong, and then Hubert said that he was going to stop bombing without any comma or semicolon, just period. And then Mac Bundy made a fool speech where he said we ought to stop it for nothing and pull our troops out. So they picked up and went to Hanoi. And they stayed in Hanoi 2 weeks from October the 15th to right about now. October 11th, I guess. They come back now, and all this time we have been working with everybody we knew. The governments cannot be named because it's life and death to them. They may be invaded. But the Eastern Europeans have been helpful. The Indians have been helpful. The Soviets have been helpful. The French have been helpful. We've had them all in. And we have talked to some of them nearly every day. And we've told them the clock was ticking and that they could settle this in 30 days. They did in 1954 in 30 days. But that our constitutional processes did not change. We would have a new president. But Mansfield and Dirksen would still be leaders, and Russell would still be chairman of the committee, and Fulbright would likely be chairman. And those men would carry on, and all of our joint chiefs would be the same. So they needn't to play. Even if Humphrey was elected, they're not going to get any better deal. Even if Nixon, they're not going to get any better deal. Now, this is for your information only.
Yeah.
We get to the point where it looks like that we might get the GVN in the meeting. And they understand thoroughly that they will bust up the meeting. We don't even come back here. Abrams is authorized with the rules of engagement to retaliate himself if they shoot across the DMZ.
Yeah.
By launching bombers immediately. And we've told them all that. Told the Russians, told everybody else. Now, if that gets in the paper, the deal's off. So that's why you cannot say this to anybody that's going to get in the paper.
Yeah.
Because these folks are the most sensitive people in the world. But we have said this. And about that time, some of Mr. Nixon's people come in and tell both sides. Now, I have information about who you had a glass of beer with last night. You don't know it, but I do. And you have ways and means. You have ways and means, you get my point though, don't you?
Yeah.
You have ways and means of knowing what's going on in the country. What we know what Chu says when he talks out in Vietnam, and we know what happens here. And some of Mr. Nixon's people getting a little bit unbalanced and unfrightened, and like Hubert did when he said no comma, no period, or like Bundy did. About the time you called me last week, they started going into the South Vietnamese embassy and also sending some word to Hanoi, which has prolonged this thing a good deal.
Yeah.
The net of it is despicable, and if it were made public, I think it would rock the nation. But the net of it was that if they just hold out a little bit longer, that he's a lot more sympathetic and he can kind of, they can do better business with him than they can with their present president. And in Hanoi, they've been saying that, well, if you won't settle this thing, I'm not bound by all these things. So I haven't had this record, and I can make a little better deal with you there. I rather doubt Nixon has done any of this. But there's no question but what folks for him are doing it. And very frankly, we're reading some of the things that are happening. So as a consequence, while Chu and all of our allies are ready to go on a bombing ceasefire cessation. It just may be temporary. We may be back on it in the next day if they don't follow these two things, if they violate the DMZ, or if they sell the shitty cities. We could stop the killing out there. We could get everything we've asked for, the GV, in there. But they've got this question, this new formula put in there, namely, wait on Nixon. And they're killing 400 or 500 every day waiting on Nixon. Now, these folks, I doubt, are authorized to speak for Nixon, but they're going in there, and they range all the way from very attractive women to old line China lobbyists. And some people pretty close to him in the business world. I was shocked when I looked at the reports, see? And I've got them, and so forth. Now, that's had a little effect on Chu. He has signed on to this back as early as October that this is what we ought to do, as have all the Allied government, as have the French, and as have the Russians, and the thing that busted up is that Hanoi had, and all of our people. Now, I told Dick Nixon and George Wallace and Hubert Humphrey that we had to have prompt and productive discussions. In order to be productive, the GVN had to be present. In order to be prompt, it ought to be in a matter of weeks, not 2 or 3 years. And that they wouldn't take advantage of, that meant that they just wouldn't be blowing up our house while we were trying to eat dinner. They wouldn't be hitting the DMZ in the cities. Now, if they do hit the DVM in the cities, we would have to just come back to bombing the next day. Now then, the facts are that as of now, the monsoon has started up there, and bombing ain't worth a damn, and not going to be for 90 days in the north. So we, without telling them, we might quit anyway, if we had nothing in return. Because we need to do it in Laos, where it's drying up and where they can really increase their traffic. And we need to do it in South Vietnam, where they are trying to mount an offensive on Saigon. So I called in all the Joint Chiefs, and all of them recommended that we stop. And that we take this GVN presence. I called in General Momar, who's been in charge of Air Force, because I knew I'd have this LeMay on my hand, and Momar's been in charge of it in Vietnam. He operates from Thailand. He's down at Langley. And he explained to me that it wouldn't do any good where I'm bombing now, and if I get anything out of it, I ought to do it and move it over to the other places. Now, we can't say we're going to move it over, because it'll look like that we're not giving them anything, and we're not sincere that we're giving up bombing the north, but we're going to spread more bombs on the south. But he told me that that was it. Every civilian, every military man we have talked to, and Andy Goodpaster particularly, is very strong. But I decided that I had to talk to Abrams before I reached any conclusion. He had sent me a cable and said he would do it without the cities and without the DMZ if they just let the GVN be present, because in effect he's going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And he said, psychologically, the GVN being present will really wreck the Viet Cong, because it'll mean that their supporters, the Soviet and the Hanoi, have really recognized them, or they wouldn't let them come in the meeting. Well, that's what our folks think. I don't know. We're going to let the NLF come in the meeting, so we're not recognizing them. But they think psychologically this will really do them up in the south, and Westmoreland and Abrams and Momar, I think they've had them whipped since September. They think they're whipped. So Abrams came in at 2:30 yesterday morning, or day before yesterday morning, and he drove 24 hours straight time, and he stayed here till 4 o'clock. And he was just as strong as horseradish and said that this ought to be done. We took this, and I went back to Paris and asked Paris how many times they told him that they had to respect the cities and respect the DMZ, and they counted up, and they came back, they told them 12 times. Now, they've never agreed to it, because they will not agree to reciprocity. But they know that if they don't do it,